Right, Wayne Barnes, your quickfire questions start now. Childhood hero.
Oh my goodness, where did this one come from? Well, I was always, like, I'll give a rugby one first of all. I was petrified of Martin Johnson, so yeah. I remember I even apologised to him when I sin-binned him in my first game with him.
Did you really?
Yeah, I said, sorry, sir, and yellow-carded him. Because you get
and what was his reaction?
He did stare and he swore, so I won't swear, but he said that's the only decision you've got right all day.
Did he really?
Yeah, which good I thought him. Was brilliant. So from a rugby point of view, you know, because it was that iconic 2003 yeah. team. So
I hated interviewing him as a junior reporter as well. Absolutely loathed it.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
But you get, what happens is when you start off your career, you get sent to places like Welford Road or King's Own, you know, in a shed when they're expected to win. You know, it yeah. should be like top versus bottom, and it was. So it was like 70-3 at the time. Someone took a quick tap penalty. He smacked them after about 30 centimeters, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna have to sin bin Martin Johnson yeah. CBE. Yeah,
one for the ages. Favorite ground?
I love the European scene. You know, so Clermont this weekend, Toulouse, Ravenhill, and Thomond Park, all of those kind of iconic kind of grounds around Europe, but none better than the Principality, the Millennium Stadium. Such an amazing stadium. Walk down to the stadium from the hotel room, through the streets of Cardiff, which are always, you know, thriving at that point. Roof shut, 78,000 people singing Hymns and Harriers, the Welsh anthem. It's, you know, and there's so many special games there, from the 07 match to, you know, my 100th match there. I've got so many great memories of that stadium.
Do you get nervous? What do you say to yourself 20 seconds before kickoff?
So I actually write reset on my hand, and that doesn't mean scrums, because yeah. I know no one likes a reset scrum. But every time I start thinking about things which I... distractions, you know, so what's a player is going to think about that decision, what's a coach's, how's that going to look in review, because that goes through your mind really? During a match. I look at that, and you'll usually see me smile because I know I'm in that moment, and yeah. then you get back to your decision making. So there'll be times when you're like, wow, this is noisy today, or wow, I'm under pressure here, but as soon as you think about that, you're not thinking about your job. So quick look at hand, quick smile, and move on.
So you do get nervous? You don't get nervous? You feel the pressure, the eyeballs?
I'm 30 seconds, a minute before kickoff, as you're standing in the tunnel and you're just a walk out, that's when the butterflies come. You walk out, you take a deep breath. As soon as you blow the first whistle, though, you're kind of in the swing of things and you don't have time to be nervous. But yeah, those last minutes before matches, you realise the enormity of it.
Best player you have refereed?
I mentioned the one who I was probably most scared of was Johnson. The players that... you kind of talked about time and time again are the ones that there's a reason why they are talked about time and time again. So McCall, Pocock, John Schmidt, and they're also good leaders and good men as well. So, you know, and they weren't what I would call, you know, the loud, vociferous captains. They would be captains who led by example. So yeah. when they were in trouble, so whenever New Zealand were in trouble, McCall would go and find the ball and go up the guts of the opposition. When Australia were in trouble, you'd see Pocock over the ball getting a turnover. So they just led by example, but they were also just decent human beings. And so, you know, those three really do jump out. You know, you probably then got the more up-to-date ones of people like Alan Wynne, you know, who do, you know, kind of just have a certain presence about them.
Yeah. Best game you've refereed? You must get. Do you get asked that quite a bit?
You do, and it kind of evolves. You know, so you go most up to date. You have things like the third test between New Zealand and Ireland, which was, you know, it built the two games in the lead up to it were special. This is the first first potential series win on Irish territory. New Zealand territory. I was involved in a Lions twice. So 2009 and 21, they decided to have non-neutral refs for the midweek stuff. They usually have neutral refs. 09 was the first ever time that they'd done it. And so I refereed the Lions versus the Orange Free State Cheetahs, Vodacom Cheetahs at Vodacom Park. That was special too, you know, because people forget refs are actually rugby fans as well. They just think they're there to ruin their afternoon.
and everyone watching.
Exactly. So, you know, growing up watching the Lions, I think we all remember 90. I was at the university when the 97 Lions took place. And you remember that iconic kind of tour. And so then to be part of the Lions, you know, to see the traveling fans, I still think that's pretty special. But my favorite game, not an international game, and it wasn't too far from here, over at Barnes, London French versus Kilburn Cosmos.
Sorry, what?
London French versus Kilburn Cosmos. My first game I'd ever refereed without giving a single penalty.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was meant to be refereeing.
Was that laissez-faire reffing, or was that just two incredibly disciplined teams?
A little bit of both. Right, a little bit of both. A lot of communication. I was meant to be refereeing Racing versus Munster that weekend, and it was the time when the French, the Paris attacks took place. Yeah. So this would have been 2015. So my game got called off midweek. So I rang the local referee society. I live quite close to here. I'm down in Twickenham. Local referee society said, can you go and referee a game for us? I'm like, yeah. So it was Kilburn Cosmos versus London French in Barnes. I got the bus there. I got met by the president, refereed a game, zero penalty, greeted by the president, gave me a beret and a glass of Chablis as I was walking off the pitch. And then I had to down a pint with the other men in the match because I got joint player of the match for not giving a penalty.
Quite right too. Yeah. I like that. Popping it back. So I was going to say, strangest place you've refereed. Would that be up there? Have you ever done a trip, you know, like a trip to the Arctic? Or sometimes there are those extraordinary opportunities.
Not much rugby playing in the Arctic. No. If I'm honest.
But there is a tournament up there, isn't there?
Lee Mears? Yeah, I remember.
Yes, they did.
I was asked.
Was that a wooden spoon thing? Wasn't it?
Everest, wasn't it? Like the highest ever rugby game.
Yeah.
Forest of Dean's a pretty odd place.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm from the Forest of Dean, so I can say that.
I'm amazed you've only got five fingers.
Well,
like
one got removed when you leave.
Yeah, exactly. Surgically removed.
So there'll be some odd places there. Most of the village teams that I've refereed coming up through the ranks, likes of Bream, Lydney, Cinderford, Drybrook, all of those teams where like the local Forest Combination Cup that would take place in April and May of each year. that definitely taught you a bit about rugby. So the Forest of Dean's pretty odd, but I love it dearly. And then, you know, you get to go to some fantastic places which are a bit off the beaten track. So I was in Fiji this year.
Yeah.
My first international was Fiji versus Samoa in Suva.
Wow.
Back in 2006. And you get to see a side of a country. Well, one, you probably would never go to Fiji or Samoa. Yeah. Probably not one of those countries because they're so quite difficult and so inaccessible. But to be able to have a good look around Fiji, that was special again. Samoa, really. Remember Peter Fatialofa?
Fats. What a legend.
Well, he took me on what he called a tea tour, which was, I thought we'd go around the island drinking cups of tea. Not an Earl Grey in sight.
Right.
So he took me around about 15 different spots on a minibus tour.
Drinking.
That is the wrong person to drink with.
Yeah.
Jason Leonard, I realized this weekend, was not the right person. On Tuesday, don't try and drink with him. Don't try and drink with Peter Fatialofa.
Yeah.
He wanted a game of squash in the morning. So he left me, like just threw me out of my hotel about 9 o'clock at night and said, I'll see you for a game of squash at 8 a.m. I'm like, two hopes, mate.
Good luck.
That's what you get to see with rugby.
Front Row Union at their strongest. Favorite band?
Oh, see, I'm a bit sad. So 1980s is my is my era.
Right, we're right in the same sync with
that. Yeah. So I would probably put up there someone like like a good sing along to like Wham or Spandau Ballet, something like that.
Good.
Yeah.
Proper classic 80s.
Yeah, like something that gets the crowd going. I also into my musicals. So So when I drive home quite often after a rugby match, Les Mis will be blaring out. if people drive by me, like looking
that
over.
Social media content for the ages.
Exactly. A bit of, everything's a go-to in Les Mis, from on my own.
Some proper bangers in there.
Yeah. So, what's
Can
her name?
Can you hear the people singing the song?
You wanted to be an actor. That's the only reason I became a barrister was I wasn't good enough to become an actor. I'd have loved to have been a West End singer.
Never say never.
Yeah. It's actually, it's quite funny. As I woke up at the morning of my 100th game, Alfie Bowe and, oh, I'm going to forget his name now. Who says Alfie?
Michael Ball.
And Michael Ball were on Saturday Kitchen. I thought, this is meant to be. This is there meant to be. And then we went to the Millennium Stadium and they had a band singing all the classic hits from the musicals before the match. So they had a bit of Greatest Showman from now on. Yeah. I thought, this is my time.
There you go.
This is my time.
Amazing how the
world
works.
Is my moment.
This is your perfect moment, some might say. Alfie Bowe lives next door to my parents-in-law.
Oh, really?
Curious world.
Oh, I'd love to come around for dinner. Stroud.
Come and have a sing-song, yeah.
You say Stroud?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise.
Chalford Hill.
Oh, very nice. Very posh.
There you go. Well, not, yes, highs and lows. Come dine with me dinner. Starter main and pudding.
Oh, we're vegetarian at home.
Are
so Paul is veggie. So I wouldn't get away with putting a steak out. So it
lots
would
of
be
hummus and falafel.
That's stereotyping vegetarians. So it would be something very colourful. And Polly would tell me while I was cooking. So it'd be something like maybe a nice risotto.
Yes.
Start like a risotto.
Good. Yeah.
It looks like you've worked hard at it. Yeah, can you it just stand in there? Just
lots of mixing.
And then, so we're on an Italian theme. So it would be something like a spaghetti with some green things in it.
Yeah. Spaghetti and green things. Good. It sounds delicious.
Yeah.
And a fruit-based pudding?
Oh, it'd be a tiramisu,
wouldn't
it? Tiramisu.
Good.
Homemade tiramisu.
Delicious. Form an orderly queue.
Yeah.
Tipple of choice?
Well, I'm seasonal.
Right.
So, obviously, summer, West Country.
Cider.
Yeah. It's just turned to Guinness season, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, it would be Guinness. Like, and then
all red wine on a Negroni?
Not a Negroni.
No?
I'm not grown up enough for that.
Okay.
Nice bottle of red wine.
Yeah.
With my Italian dinner. But we'd probably drink more white wine at home, actually.
Do you?
Yeah.
In the winter?
Yeah, but a big punchy kind of, I'm sounding Poncy now, aren't I?
No.
Refereeing
has changed, you don't know.
Yeah. Like a big, I can't keep just using the French kind of kind of Chardonnay. So a new world Chardonnay,
Chardonnay.
A New Zealand or an Australian big bold Chardonnay.
That'll ingratiate you back to your friends down in the land of the long white cloud. And last but not least, hidden or secret talents other than karaoke musical sing-alongs.
I would have put singing up there as my hidden talent. I used to like a bit of Amdram.
Did you?
I used to like pantomime growing up in Bree Methodist Chapel.
Right.
I would. I played a dame once or twice.
Right. I think we all good Amdrams have
exactly
in a large wig and something similar.
So I like a bit of Amdram, bit of singing. I wouldn't say I'm talented, but
enthusiastic,
very enthusiastic.
Would you like to do a bit of media when the time comes?
I want my weekends back. There's one thing I'm really looking forward to about when this all finishes is like players get it where a player will know what their season looks like.
Mm.
So they know they're at home this weekend, they're away that weekend, they're in Europe that weekend, and this is the tour that England are going on to New Zealand. I find out on a Monday where I'm going on the Saturday for the Premiership, and I find out, like, I don't know where I am in Six Nations yet.
And why can they not put that in now?
It'll be things around form. It'll be things around depending on what the game means. Is it one versus three or is it, 12 versus seven? So there's things like that. There's which I do understand. And as an example, we got back from from New Zealand versus Ireland on the Monday after the final test. And we didn't know where we were going for rugby championships. And it started three weeks later. So Carl Dixon and Luke Pearce, I think 8 days at home. And then we're away for another 2 weeks. And what I'm looking forward to when this all finishes is the certainty of being able to say to your mate, I'll come away with you that weekend.
Yeah.
Or saying to my family, why don't we get together over Easter? Or Polly saying, can I have that weekend to go away with the girls?
Yeah.
That's a bit that people don't see behind the scenes. Neither should they. They shouldn't understand that. But so, I think doing something in the media would be great, particularly if it's a Monday afternoon in the Brixton area.
You're always welcome. The good, the bad, and the referee.
So, but I'm not sure I want to go into every Saturday,
yeah,
you know,
dip in, dip out.
Yeah.
Do you know, it's funny, and I would only compare, how old are you? You're
43.
40, so with the same age, I'm just 42.
All right, all right.
A lot more Botox going on this side of the fence. But what I would say is, as somebody who's gone from doing 42 weekends a year, as I was doing with Sky,
yeah,
to doing 10,
yeah,
they are happy days when you get it back.
Yeah.
You've got a lot to look forward, yeah, to. The final thing which I've just remembered and I wanted to ask you is that we had Bob Skinstat on last week, mm, who was talking about, we were talking about the RASI experience.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he suggested, and I'd just love to get your 2p on it, is that actually referees should be part of an independent body, removed from World Rugby, set up on their own and able to kind of conduct themselves and organise themselves, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously with input and feedback, et cetera.
Yeah.
But having referees within World Rugby leads to these scenarios, as we have done with South Africa. We were talking about the fact the narrative in amongst Springbok Rugby is the world is against us type thing. Is that something that has ever been discussed, considered? Is there any validity to that? Or is...
Yeah, I listened, obviously, a regular listener, Good, Bad and Rugby.
Deep in the night when you can't sleep.
Yeah, on those long journeys, yeah, home from Sale.
I know it well.
So I was interested, so there's 2 points to it. We're not employed by World Rugby now. So okay. I'm employed by the Rugby Union. And what happens is World Rugby say, you're going to referee France versus New Zealand.
Yeah.
And we just go and referee it. So
you're not employees of World Rugby.
No. So we kind of, it's not even subcontracted. There's an understanding that if they want Wayne Barnes for this game, they get them. And there has been quite a regular discussion about whether we should follow something like the cricket model.
Yeah.
The cricket model are all employed by the ICC. And then you have a head of officiating who employs their, I think it's about a dozen international umpires, and then they go around and do the international game. So there's a discussion about whether that is the right route for refereeing. I think as long as there's a reason why you change why it currently works, and that might be that, for example, I am an advocate of it. I think that we should be employed by the international game, by World Rugby, because that means that I can experience Super Rugby. Ben O'Keefe can come up and referee top 14, the Premiership, the URC, because people always have said that the referees from the Southern Hemisphere referee differently to the Northern Hemisphere. I don't buy into that. What we do, we referee different games. So right. When I referee a Bledisloe Cup, is a different game than refereeing Scotland versus France.
In what way?
Because of the way the game's played. It's more forward orientated. It's more scrum, more orientated up here, whereas it's more open, free-flowing. The breakdown is kind of perhaps slightly quicker. I remember Spreader saying to me my first Bledisloe Cup, and we're talking, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, just sit back and let it happen. And what he meant by it was they will referee the breakdown for you. You don't have to overly get involved. And I think my first Bledisloe Cup game, there were about 13, 14 penalties, because that definitely happened.
Yeah.
And that wasn't me refereeing in an English style. That was me refereeing the game ahead in front of me. So what I think would be interesting to explore is whether or not the top 10, top 12 referees in the world could then go across all the different competitions. So the likes of, you know, the French team get to know the Kiwi referees a bit more. And when I go down to Australia, I know the Australian players a little bit more, because I mentioned, you know, to Ben, I think the best games are when the players and the refs interact well. There's that mutual trust. You only build mutual trust by meeting people. You know, you don't build that over a Zoom call.
Too true.
So I think there is something to be explored around that, about having a top-end group of match officials who are employed by the governing body, who are accountable to the governing body. But that still means that the review system has to be kind of bought into by everyone. So if it's I'm employed by the RFU or by World Rugby or by Bob's idea of an independent kind of tribunal, which Bob is going to lead by the sounds of it.
Well, maybe bringing you on board to head it up.
Well, who knows? But whatever's agreed, you know, around the review process, everyone has to buy into that.
Yeah.
Because it's all good having these kind of systems and processes in place, but we have to buy into them.
Did you play?
Very badly, non-tackling back row.
Were you?
Yeah.
Big ball carrier, or what was your forte?
Getting rid of the ball very quickly. I was good in the line out, see, because yeah. I'm 6 foot three yeah. and lightish. I played at that well-known rugby university of Norwich.
Did you?
Yeah.
I was you know, speaking Partridge to, or not?
he was like, it was the height of Partridge when we were up there, so we loved it.
Yeah.
I went.
Quite a hotbed, Norwich.
For what?
Well, Young's brothers.
Oh, right. Yeah, they
Freddie
were all
Stewart.
Up the road. So,
they were up there, were they?
Yeah. North Horsham was their club. Right.
What did you do in Norwich?
Law, obviously. I'm a lawyer, aren't
I? Yeah, but lots of people actually. My wife did English and then did a law conversion course.
She?
So not a stupid question.
Oh, yeah. I wish I hadn't done a law course. I wish I'd done something which, you know, I would have enjoyed a little bit more, but I wanted to get through quickly. So
I did history of art, so you're two up on me.
Oh, history of art was really strong in Norwich.
Was it?
Yeah, it was like, I think one of the royals might have even went there to do it.
Don't know which one that would be.
Because it's a Sainsbury Centre. So I kind of
yes, it is.
It is.
Yeah.
This is a really odd kind of
how
turn
rugby
from,
can take us on a random path.
Yeah. The Sainsbury Centre, history of art, quite a few of my mates did it. You could tell the people who I hang around with.
Basically just colouring in.
Yeah. It was interesting. I play on a Wednesday and referee on a Saturday during my time up there.
Yeah.
And when it got to the like kind of the decision time at do I carry on refereeing or do I play? It was really quickly obvious which I was better at because most of my teammates told me it was time to retire.
They gave you a golden whistle.
Yeah, that's only like 21. They're like, yeah, probably time for you to retire.
Who first gave you the whistle? Who did you first get asked to referee by?
And so I got injured playing, and so a friend of my dad's was a ref, and my school teacher was a ref, so they said go along to. I actually just turned up at my local rugby club, Bream Thirds, and they said, oh, we haven't got a ref today, can you referee? So. Yeah. I ended up refereeing Bream Thirds versus Bury or Whoppers.
Wow. And how good were you?
Out of the 30 players and the one ref, I was probably in the top 10 of referees on the pitch. But no, it's, you know, that's back to those odd places where you referee. Bream, it's lovely about Bream. Bream had two pitches built on a slope like that.
Yeah.
So they got the money to flatten one. So you would think that they'd flatten the top one. But no, they flattened the bottom one, so it just was constantly flooded. that's my rugby club.
That's yes, yeah. Brains Trust in short supply.
Yeah.
Well, from heady days at the beginning, I think there are many people who will hope that there's a World Cup final for you, should England obviously not do what England need to do. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Good luck.
Thank
Love
you.
For the family. Wayne Barnes, what a star.
Thank you.